Chapter 16. Selene. Sean and Veronica remained quiet on the drive back to Minneapolis, their eyes concentrated on the scenery rather than talking about what she planned to do. During the drive, Veronica glanced over at him, wiping the condensation from the windows. They thanked the taxi driver for dropping them off in front of the apartment building. Only when they stood in the foyer at Palm Oaks did Sean make his first comment. "I don't think you can trust him." "Coming from someone who I thought I could trust, really, Sean?" She walked up the stairs and he followed. They reached the front door of her apartment.
"Veronica, I don't know how many times I have to say sorry."
"As many times as it takes," she fumbled with her keys.
"I'm sorry then." His shoulders slumped.
"I'm sorry.
I'm sorry."
He dropped to his knees.
"I'm sorry. I'm sorry."
"Get up." She watched him stand to his feet. She couldn't stay pissed off at him forever, even though she didn't mind the feeling. She knew eventually she'd have to get over it. Sean risked his position in the organization just by telling her and going with her to Blind Bluff Manor.
"I mean it. I'm sorry."
"I know, but you have to understand where I'm coming from."
"I do."
"So you know why I have to go back to that sepulcher alone." He looked at her uncertainly. Veronica didn't know either, but she wasn't ready to give up, just yet. She anxiously wanted to meet with Nathan again, to find out what more information he knew. They heard Murphy's door slowly open.
"Hey!" Murphy's eyes moved to Sean.
"Hey, Murphy." Veronica managed to find the right key, gently placing it into the lock.
"Are you still up for tonight?"
He opened his door further. Veronica had forgotten again. She caught herself, careful not to trip over any words she was about to exert. He stood in his doorway, revealing his new look. He had cut his black hair short into a buzz cut. He straightened his silver silk shirt and swiped the lint off his ironed blue jeans. His dark dress shoes gleamed in the dim light of the hallway. He looked like a corporate hedgehog than anything. She turned the key, unlocking the door, and watching Sean, who wasn't worried about her predicament, walk into the living room.
"Yeah, I'm still up for tonight. What time did we agree on?"
"We didn't really agree on a time. Maybe 7 or 8, or whenever you're ready?"
Murphy smiled back. "It's only about 4:45, but I like to get ready early anyway."
"All right." She stepped into the apartment. "I'll be over at 7.
"Cool. See you then."
She slowly closed the door and turned back to Sean. He sat on her couch with his hands nestled behind his head.
"That guy likes you." His snippy comment followed his quick giggle. "Do you like him?"
"I can't believe I almost forgot again." She walked over to the couch.
"Well, I can." He moved over, making room for her to sit. "We just came from Nathan's. The last thing on your mind would be some date with a college weirdo."
"He's not weird," she defended him.
"Well, not really. He's kinda cute."
"No, he's weird," he repeated.
"Oh, come on. The guy seems to always know when you come home. Every time you take out your keys to get into your apartment, he's right there, opening his door, trying to make conversation."
"That's a weirdo," Sean smiled.
"Or a stalker."
"That's not funny," she jokingly slapped him on his arm.
"I'm not trying to be funny. I'm just stating the obvious facts."
He placed his arm around her and carefully kissed her forehead.
"Are you gonna go?"
"Yeah."
"You sure?"
"Yeah, I need a break."
"Well, I'll be here when you get back. I might even raid your kitchen if I manage to gather enough energy to do so."
He leaned his head back, staring at the ceiling.
"If you aren't, you can call me or message me if your date ends up being horrific."
Veronica slapped him again on his chest.
"You're bad." She looked up at him and he snickered.
"Yeah, I know."
The smile disappeared from his face, replaced by worry.
"If you want, I can also email Kenneth and lie and let him know that you've turned your search toward the sanctuary fires."
She smiled briefly at his attempt to mend their friendship. This time, she didn't think twice about trusting him. She hoped, for his sake, that he'd follow through.
"Yeah, that worked," she replied. "That should get him off my back for a day or so."
Shaw nodded. "I was supposed to check in a hotel instead of staying here. I think they're on to me already."
Sean remained on the couch with his head tilted to the ceiling. He couldn't sleep, nor did he want to. There was too much commotion occurring on the street below. Groups of drunken teens walked by Palm Oaks, screaming at one another in mid-conversation. The noise of a police siren in the distance was followed by the blaring horn of a fire truck. When the noises finally subsided, the apartment went silent. He didn't bother to turn on the television or browse the internet. He had to do something to make things right between himself and Veronica. He didn't know what that was just yet. He knew how to start it. He could explain everything to her from here on out. No lies. But fearing what the Brotherhood would do to him stopped him. It was a no-no to disobey rules, and it meant being ejected from the organization. Or worse. Sure, he was told of researchers who disappeared after being caught, but he assumed they were kicked out after being reprimanded. But what if something worse had happened to them? It was a question that plagued his mind. His cell phone buzzed, and he instantly sprung to his feet. His phone beeped with an incoming text message from Kenneth. The message read, "Bar 69," followed by X's and O's. He was not prepared. Sean pulled out a small piece of paper from his briefcase and scribbled one simple line, just enough so that Veronica would finally know the truth. He wanted to write more, to tell her that if he didn't return or didn't contact her in a few days, then something horrible had happened to him. He didn't expect any sympathy from her, and he also wasn't expecting her to forgive him that easily. He grabbed his briefcase, his laptop, and his jacket. He looked around the apartment for a sharp wooden object, thinking maybe she had an extra stake hidden underneath the couch cushions. Unable to find anything, he grabbed a knife from the kitchen, and without looking back, he left her apartment and walked down the street toward the bar. During his walk, he played the upcoming scenario in his mind. He expected Kenneth to be at the bar, with researchers in tow. Kenneth would question why he refused to obey Mr. Austin's orders by escorting Veronica to Blind Bluff Manor, by refusing to leave her apartment and check into the Gathwaite Hotel and obtaining more documents. Then Kenneth would blurt out what part of the Brotherhood oath Sean had broken. To be taken off his assignment, the researchers would surround him and escort him back to their hotel to be processed before being put on a plane back to San Diego. But Sean already decided that he wasn't going to go willingly, which would make the meeting less than joyous. Breaking the Brotherhood oath was the lowest level any researcher could achieve. However, it was also the easiest thing to accomplish as a researcher. Just by saying no meant risking any advancement in the organization. Sean knew at an early age that he'd break at least the oath. To follow and obey the commands of your superiors under all costs. But what sane human being would follow any orders so blindly? Question authority. That was one law that he held dear to his heart. Sean also didn't understand why Kenneth chose the bar rather than their hotel room for this meeting. A bar wasn't a typical Brotherhood meeting place, especially in a city teeming with demon. He reached into the pocket of his jeans to double-check the knife. The dull blade ran against his fingers, but he hoped it wouldn't fail him if he needed it for protection. He crossed the street at a busy intersection, near a group of teenagers at a bus shelter, frolicking on their skateboards. He passed them and whispered a muted greeting, but they didn't answer back. He approached the bar and slowly reached for the door handle. He opened the door, hearing the sound of a football game blaring over the muted sound of music coming from the jukebox. Stacked chairs lined the walls of the empty bar. His nose caught the weak odor of old beer. Near the back bar, he heard pool balls clashing together and Kenneth's voice welcoming him in. Kenneth's smile grew wide and it made Sean uneasy. His attire consisted of a black trench coat, black turtleneck sweater, and black pants, trademark clothing for field researchers. Sean quickly and cautiously scanned the area, expecting that Veronica's father sent researchers with him, but he didn't see anyone else around except for the bartender watching a football game on television. "Your outfit just screams brotherhood." He stood next to the pool table. Kenneth glanced over his clothing. He grabbed a pool stick and reached for a stack of quarters neatly placed on the edge of the pool table. "I just finished a game. You want in?" Sean sneered. Even in a city filled with demon, Kenneth's demeanor gave off an odor of self-worthiness. The way he carried himself. The way he smiled. The way he popped the quarters into the slots on the side of the pool table. The way he positioned the balls in the triangle. It annoyed him. He didn't see why Mr. Austin placed trust in a person whose only care in the world evolved around sucking up to superiors to move ahead in the world and who wore different shades of black clothing to emphasize his status as a researcher.
"I didn't expect you to come to Minneapolis so soon."
"It wasn't the plan, but a few inconsistencies and issues surrounding your assignment worried Mr. Austin at the last minute." Kenneth smiled at the position of the triangle on the pool table. He removed the triangle and tossed it to the side. "Like taking his daughter to Blind Bluff Manor." He swallowed hard. "Like I told Mr. Austin before I left, his daughter isn't easy to influence. And like Mr. Austin said, that's where your expertise comes into play," Kenneth rudely replied back. "How long do you think she believed the whole sanctuary fires might be the problem from everything scenario?" Sean responded. "The girl's smarter than that." Kenneth sharpened the pool stick and took aim. "Yes, but she's also determined and easy to influence." He released his grip and Sean watched the ball swirl around the table with one ball heading toward the right corner pocket. "That's why you were chosen for this assignment, Sean." He walked around the pool table. "And it was a simple assignment, really."
"You call this an assignment?"
"Yes, I do." He moved around Sean to the other side of the table and positioned himself for the next shot. "As a Brotherhood member, it's not your call to question." He took aim again and watched another ball ease its way into the side pocket. "You do the job that's assigned to you." "I didn't want this job or the assignment." Kenneth placed the pool stick on the table. "This game is boring. I don't see why anyone likes pool." He looked up at Sean. "Tell me, what did Nathan Tiernan tell you when you went to Blind Bluff Manor?" Sean paused. Bay knew about Nathan and his sanctuary. If he told Kenneth everything, it would jeopardize Veronica's search, and he didn't want to fail her again. He had to choose his next words carefully. "Nothing we didn't already know." "Are you lying to me?" Kenneth shook his head. "Because lying to your new region leader is strictly forbidden and goes against the oath you took years ago." "Like I said, nothing we already knew." Kenneth shrugged and continued his assault. "Mr. Austin is not happy with your poor and miserable performance. You failed him, your sisters and brothers, and Brotherhood. Not to mention you were given the simple task to check into the hotel on Hennepin Avenue, and you decided to ignore that and still stay at her apartment." He clapped his hands together. "I'm afraid that your mission will end here now. You are ordered to go back to San Diego, where you will be reprimanded in front of a Brotherhood court of your peers, who will then decide on what punishment to give you." "Bullshit," Sean hastily replied. "I'm not going anywhere." The snappy remark quickly wiped the grin from Kenneth's face. "Are you choosing to disobey Mr. Austin's orders again?" Kenneth asked sternly. "She still needs me here, and she wants me here. I'm not leaving." "Be careful." Sean felt Kenneth's hot breath on his skin and said, "She knows about Lucius, Kai,
and how her father was involved in Lucius's disappearance. Kenneth huffed.
You are stupid to believe the stories of a defected researcher.
I'm out of the Brotherhood. I'm done. Sean turned to walk away. And you could tell Mr. Austin that I refuse to be a lab rat for the Brotherhood.
His heart began to pace, and he placed his hands in his pocket, rubbing over the small knife's blade. He turned and walked toward the door, smiling. Pressure lifted slightly from his chest, and for the first time in his life, he felt free to do whatever he wanted. No more rules, no more lying to Veronica, and no more kissing ass to the upper ranks of the Brotherhood. He couldn't wait to tell Veronica the news, and he couldn't wait to apologize for the false information he'd given her. He reached for the handle on the front door when it flew open, almost slamming into his face. He felt a cold grip around his throat that held him firmly. He looked up into the face of a pale woman with reddish hair. A wide grin extended on her face from cheek to cheek. With force, she pushed him back and tightened her grip. Sean grabbed the knife in his pocket and yanked it out. He swung at her, and she grabbed onto his wrist. Pain shot through his hand, and he quickly dropped the knife to the ground. He felt the grip around his throat tighten. He heard Kenneth's execrable laughter behind him. The red-haired woman lifted him with ease and slammed his body onto the pool table. A burning sensation shot through Sean's back, and he screamed, feeling each and every pool ball digging into his back. The bartender turned to look and quickly lowered the volume on his television.
You're not going anywhere. Kenneth leaned over him.
Sean looked into the woman's dancing green eyes that slowly transformed into the color black. Her grin didn't reveal the sharp teeth of a Ramanga, yet her strength matched that of a demon.
Let me go, Sean said in between exasperated breaths. But the demon woman wouldn't budge. Shut up, the female demon said in a whisper.
He attempted to raise himself, but the woman forced him back. His skin underneath her grasp began to grow numb, and Sean struggled again to break free. The tingling sensation extended to his face and to his shoulders. His arms and his legs went limp, and his eyelids grew heavy.
I need him alive. Kenneth turned to the Gimon woman. Not dead. Suddenly the numbing ceased. She was a Lugatnimon, just like Lucius. Hey! They heard the bartender's voice behind them. The woman slowly released her grip from Sean's neck and turned around. Get the fuck out of here before I call the cops, he threatened.
Sean watched helplessly as the woman reached for a pool stick, and without any effort, she thrust the end into the bartender's stomach. His eyes bulged, and he wrapped his arm around the pool stick. Blood poured from his mouth, and he struggled to stay on his feet before falling to the floor. Afterward, the female demon kicked the corpse.
What? You're going to kill me now? Sean slowly backed away from her. She spun back around in Gimon's speed, reaching for him, but when Kenneth quickly raised his hand, she stopped in mid-movement. For your own safety, Sean, I suggest you don't fight. He straightened his jacket. He stepped over the bartender's body and walked toward the door. The Lugat pushed Sean forward, and he slowly followed Kenneth.
His eyes wandered, looking for anything he could use to escape. At the same time, he struggled with keeping his thoughts hidden. What Nathan said to him about the Brotherhood working with the demon came back to him. Demon didn't work for humans. They hated the Brotherhood. Yet here was a Lugat, following Kenneth's orders. What more was the Brotherhood hiding from researchers like himself, who were trained to not trust the demon ever?
You will take care of the body, Kenneth spoke to the woman as he slowly opened the door. She nodded. Oh, and like I said, don't kill him. Mr. Austin needs him alive.